on-demand entertainment at every seat on all long-haul international flights. Delta. Keep climbing.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, March 27th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, Valero Renewable Fuels has purchased another Indiana ethanol plant. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason looks at grain bin safety issues. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat settled at 783 and three quarters, down 20 and three quarters. July, 784, down 19 and three quarters. Soft May wheat settled at 710 and a half, up 13 and three quarters. July, 714 and a half, up 13 and a quarter. May corn settled at 492, up 7 and a half. July, 496 and a quarter, up 7. December, 488, up 4. May soybean settled at 1436 and a half, down 3 and a half. July, 1407, down 3. November, 1192 and three quarters, down a half. May soybean meal settled at 470.50, up 140. May soybean oil settled at 40.43, down 30 cents. April live cattle settled at 146.47 and a half, up 67 and a half. March feeders, 178.57 and a half, up 62 and a half. And April lean hogs, 125.47 and a half. They are limit up. And those are Thursday's settlements.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says today's U.S. forecast continues to support less than favorable planting conditions in the lower Midwest over the next 2 weeks because of frequent precipitation and due to abbreviated warming. Much of the precipitation events in the U.S. Midwest will not be heavy, but their frequency of occurrence will be a little too great to offer very many days of field access. Warming in Iowa and other more northern crop areas will be inadequate to get soil temperatures anywhere near seed germination levels for a while. A brief two-day period of warmth is expected in Iowa, but it will be cooler prior to and following those days, limiting the warming trend. U.S. hard red winter wheat country will not receive much meaningful moisture until Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. Even then, rainfall will be restricted in the southwestern plains, where drought will continue without much change. Very warm temperatures and windy conditions will evolve in the U.S. central and southwestern plains this weekend. Highs will reach into the 70s and 80s. The heat and wind will stress unirrigated crops already struggling with drought. U.S. Midwest weather will trend warmer, and the trend will be most significant this weekend through early next week. High temperatures will rise to the range of 40s and 50s in the north and 60s and lower 70s in the south Sunday into Monday. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker, CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Looks like what we saw in the corn pit front end May, ending 7.5 up, was constructive for bulls.
Yes, all your technical types are viewing that as a breakout of a pennant formation that basically developed during the month of March. We had a strong up move during the month of February on into about the first week or so of March. And then since then, we've been kind of in a choppy sideways-type pattern, and we've kind of developed what we call as a pennant formation on the charts, and the market has been working toward the apex of that pennant. The apex will probably come in sometime around next Monday, but it looks like today corn went ahead and made its move for a breakout of that pennant. The initial objective, if this pennant breakout is validated tomorrow with some good follow-through activity, the width of the pennant is about 20 cents at the bottom, and you would add 20 cents to the point of breakout, and you got to put the breakout probably on May futures somewhere around 488 or 489. So it does say that there's you add 20 cents onto that, it says that maybe May corn has a quick shot on up into that 505, 510 area. That could happen, you know, tomorrow. I don't know if anybody's going to be a big buyer of corn prior to Monday's report, but it does, if the breakout kind of signals to me as a technician that Monday's report's going to have a tendency to be more positive than maybe negative the corn market.
What are the factors on that report that would add fuel to a bullish argument?
If they would lose more corn stocks or verify the I think probably what they're going to do is if they would lose stocks, if the stocks number came in at the lower end of the range, then that would force more tightening in the balance sheet, and it would really indicate that probably one of two things either happened. We've either vacuumed a lot of last year's production, went into last year's crop year on the supply tightness, or USDA is too high on production. So that would fuel, that'd be like putting jet fuel on the fire. And then I think, we all know that export demand is running very strong. We're within like 36 million bushels of USDA's projection. So a lot of trade sources that I visit with are looking for exports to maybe go well above 1.7 yet. So there's maybe room for another 100 million bushels worth of demand in corn. And if USDA stocks number comes in on the low side, all of a sudden this 2 billion bushel carryout that the 350 bears were looking for last fall just goes up in the smoke, and we're talking about a carryout maybe down around 1.3, so then that increases the pressure to raise a good crop this coming year to keep supplies kind of in line with demand, because I think export demand is going to take another big jump next year. It could be interesting, but on the other hand, if USDA finds 500 million bushels or 400 million bushels, well, it would pretty much shoot the bull right between the eyes, and that'd be the end of the spring market or spring rally like it did last year. So a lot of people fear that, and I think that's been the mentality all winter, because nobody really believes that we're going to increase feed and residual use of a billion bushels over last year, because you can probably explain 500 or 600 of it, but it's kind of hard to explain the whole billion bushels, and that's kind of why a lot of people kind of feel that USA might find at least a couple hundred million bushels on this March report, if not maybe a little bit more.
So volatility can be very high on Monday. What about soybeans? They seem to mark time today as we're waiting on what may happen on Monday.
Well, beans had a good day yesterday, and I think basically it was kind of corn and wheat catching up today. Beans, we didn't sell any beans last week, or we sold less than half a million bushels, which is, that's kind of what we, you know, the market kind of expects. The problem is we've sold over 120 million above USDA's projection. So basically what the bean market's going to have to experience is either we're going to have to import upwards of 120 million bushels of beans from South America into the U.S. to meet crush demand while we export our overbookings, or we're going to have to start seeing some sales cancellations. Now, U.S. firms did buy 8 cargoes of South American beans from China this week, but that only amounted to about 16, 17 million bushels. So we got a long ways to go before that supply-demand balance sheet loosens up to the point to keep beans from kind of propelling to the upside. Now, again, beans are in that situation where USDA could find bushels and ease that concern, or maybe lose some bushels that would really increase the tightness. Last year they found 50 million, and that was bearish beans. But the bean market feels as though it's very, very tight, and we'll have to see what USDA comes up with. If it would come in again on the low side, the beans could propel, a quick 75 cents to a dollar up on the beans would not be out of reach if things would fall bullish on Monday morning.
About a minute left. What other things do we need to keep an eye on this weekend?
Well, I think you have to keep an eye on the Russia and the Ukraine. I think, you know, Russia's troops are continuing to build along the Ukraine border. And, being a market trader, when you smell blood, you go for it. You put the pedal to the metal. And if I was Putin in his position with the Western world showing its weakness, I would go for it. And so I think you need to be watchful that Russia at some point in time might just take over the whole country, Ukraine. He's got everybody. He's in control. The West is weak. They're not going to do anything. So that could be a big market maker Monday morning also, because a lot of people do feel that if he makes a move, it would be over the weekend.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, San Antonio-based Valero Renewable Fuels says it has purchased an idled ethanol plant at the Port of Indiana Mount Vernon from Pekin, Illinois-based Aventine Renewable Energy. Valero will start hiring immediately for the 60 to 65 positions it will need at the plant about 20 miles west of Evansville. Valero Renewable Fuels now owns 11 ethanol plants in 7 states, including one in Linn, Indiana, about 40 miles northwest of Indianapolis. Aventine started building the plant, which has an annual production capacity of 110 million gallons, in late 2007, but halted construction in February of 2009 when it filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Aventine emerged from the bankruptcy and resumed construction at the site in March of 2010, and the plant began producing ethanol in December of that year. Aventine stopped production when the ethanol market declined in 2012. Ports of Indiana records indicate the plant has been idle since March of 2012. Federal regulators on Wednesday said 25 pharmaceutical companies have agreed to phase out the use of antibiotics used to promote growth in farm animals. Peter Gray has more.
Citing public health concerns, the Food and Drug Administration late last year asked pharmaceutical companies to voluntarily stop labeling drugs important for treating human infection as acceptable for use in animal production. The concern is that antibiotics provided to animals are making our bodies more vulnerable to so-called superbug infections. Douglas Miller of Elanco, one of the pharmaceutical providers that have agreed to the new restrictions, says antibiotics are just one more tool in his company's toolbox.
And if we do all the other things correctly, such as hygiene, on-farm hygiene, nutrition, enzymes, vaccination programs, all those things, if we do all those things correctly, we can minimize the need for antibiotics, but we'll never get to a point where we won't need them because disease will always be present.
The FDA says farmers will need to rely more on veterinarians to determine when antibiotics should be used on their animals. Peter Gray, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public radio stations in the Midwest. They focus on farming, food, and fuel production. You can find more at harvestpublicmedia.org. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Those that work in and around flowing grain know just how dangerous it can be. That's why they train to be in the bins and how to extract someone that has been trapped in a bin. Todd Gleason has more from the Illinois Agri-Center in Bloomington.
2013 wasn't a good year inside Illinois grain bins. It wasn't as bad as 2010 when 10 people lost their lives. Still, it was a bad year. It takes about 4 seconds to be trapped in flowing grain, like corn. It takes 25 seconds to go under. And if that happens, the outcome won't be good. But let's focus on saving lives.
What we're going to basically do is bury Thad in these pellets.
This is a grain tube rescue training simulation. It's sponsored by the Grain and Feed Association of Illinois. There are many more training dates in 2014. A grain tube can be used in about 25% of the grain entrapment cases, says University of Illinois Extension Farm Safety Specialist Bobby Heron.
The primary reason the grain tube came into existence is because we have a number of trapments in bin where people are partially trapped, not fully engulfed, with their heads still above the grain. And grain puts a significant amount of pressure against a person's body. And so you can't just go in and pull somebody out. You've got to get the pressure away from the body.
How you doing? Have any trouble breathing?
Think of the grain tube as the cardboard part of a toilet paper roll cut into 4 pieces lengthwise. It's a close-quarters puzzle to be built around the trapped person and then sunk deep into the grain. Now, once the tube is deep enough to completely surround the person from top to bottom, you empty it out. Sounds easy enough, but it's not. Again, U of I safety specialist, Baba Heron.
One of the issues is that communities buy these tubes, the rescue squad does, and they have to be trained at high-angle rescue to actually use it, have confined space training. You're not supposed to really use this unless you've had that training. So a lot of times these rescue squads, they may have the tube, but they're not really qualified to use it. So they've got to make sure to train. They get the training they need, particularly rural areas, to do it. Or they have to call in a regional tech squad, rescue tech squad, that has the training to do it. And that could take longer in a response time. But, of course, if the person's not completely submerged and, they're not life isn't in jeopardy because of the some health conditions they have and the adverse conditions that they're in with the pressure of the grain away around their body and extreme temperatures that could be in a bin, then they, you know, they have some time to to set things up and do the rescue appropriately and safely, because it is a very situation where you could have a lot of things go wrong if it's not done right. You can't get in too big a hurry.
It can take about 3 to 6 hours to safely pull someone from a grain bin. It's a long time, but remember, the rescue is as much about keeping others from being trapped during the rescue as it is about extracting the person already in the grain. 6 hours safely is way better than 25 seconds and another life lost. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Old crop, corn, soybean values, cash values would seem to suggest that there aren't a lot of beans out in the countryside. And so do we get confirmation of that on Monday's quarterly grain stock report?
Well, you'd sure think so, Dave. I mean, by all means, there's not a whole lot of beans out there. Obviously, sourcing them hasn't been easy. You know, we're still looking at a 5-under basis, here in Windsor. We're ways away from Decatur and the river. So, you know, it's obviously the sourcing beans has not been easy for processors really at any point in this crop year.
So, as a way of suggesting, then, if that be the case, and we get confirmation that we are truly, when we do the implied ending stocks around 120, 115 old crop, to what degree potential might it have to push new crop?
Well, I think that new crop so far isn't quite as wide as what it was last year. I think we were around $3 at one point inverted last year. And so, to me, I don't really know how much we're going to follow it up, considering the fact that it looks from a world supply perspective that we're going to maybe be in a little bit easier situation. A lot of that's going to depend upon what acres come out to be on Monday as well. If we have 83.5-84 million acres on beans, you're probably not going to see the new crop follow the old crop near to the extent as if we would have 79. Those would be completely different situations. So I think it's going to be dependent upon really a variety of factors.
Turn our attention to cash corn. You would think that it hadn't deteriorated quite as much as it may have had in recent weeks, given the export market and the ethanol crush for ethanol being still pretty stout. I do know one thing. The disappearance has been good.
Yeah, disappearance has been unbelievable. You look at export numbers again, they were excellent. Obviously these ethanol guys are making pretty good money, and then there's a lot of profitability in the livestock sector. So, I think demand is what's leading this market at this point, and demand has been awfully good. And so, I think it's going to be really interesting. To me, I'd like to know kind of what the impact of this PEDV virus has been on, livestock feeding. And I know a lot of guys are saying as far as cattle goes, consumption has been pretty good based upon animal units because of the severity of the winter. And so it'll be really interesting to see how those kind of play out as, the USDA brings us a new set of numbers here.
And I guess we're also learning that hog producers are not going to be docked at least for a while and grow them as big as you can get them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, they definitely need the product, and they're doing well with it. These hog prices are pretty much amazing right now.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today then, please?
Yep, 466 on cash corn, 458 for fall, 1432 for cash beans, 1163 for fall.
Thank you much, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. It's National Spanish Paella Day. The rice dish evidently originated in Spain in the mid-19th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1860, M.L. Byrne patented a new and improved corkscrew. Byrne claimed the design would provide greater strength and durability and that it could be manufactured at less cost than prior construction methods using a spiral twist of steel wire that gradually tapered from the handle to the point. In 1849, Joseph Couch received the first U.S. patent for a steam-powered percussion rock drill. In 1884, the first long-distance telephone call was made between Boston and New York City. Branch managers of the American Bell Telephone Company in Boston called their counterparts in New York City. Although they reported the call was perfectly clear, maintaining clarity on long-distance phone calls proved problematic until the early 1900s. In 1923, Sir James Dewar died. He invented the Dewar flask. The double-walled vacuum flask was commercialized in 1904 by a German company, which named the new product a thermos. And in 2001, China reported its population at 1.26 billion people. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
It looks as though we're going to be in a little bit of a sloppy weather pattern for a little while. Now you're probably thinking to yourself, oh, so what else is new? Well, we're in the position right now where we're facing a new storm system moving across the Midwest, and this is the same event that worked its way from the Texas Panhandle into parts of Missouri in the last 24 hours, and some of those hard red winter wheat areas that everyone's so concerned about picked up on a little bit of moisture. Now, it wasn't a tremendous amount, but every little bit helps out there, and the crop will probably green up a little bit better in some locations. Most of that precipitation occurred from the Texas Panhandle through Oklahoma and into some of the south-central parts of Kansas crop country. And that's the same system that's moving through the Midwest right now, and it will be with us as we go forward through the day today and into the day tomorrow, too, for some areas in the easternmost parts of the region. The storm system is not going to produce a tremendous volume of precipitation. We'll probably see a few hundredths of an inch to 2 or 3 tenths of an inch occurring most often. There will be some significant snow in the upper parts of the Midwest. This will occur mostly from parts of the eastern sections of South Dakota into upper Michigan. It'll be several inches of snow that will accumulate up that way as we go through the night tonight and into the morning tomorrow. Well, this is just the first of a series of disturbances that will impact parts of the Midwest. A second disturbance will occur in the lower parts of the region coming out of Missouri, going through southern Illinois into parts of Ohio and Kentucky as we go through the day tomorrow into early Saturday morning. And this system will produce a couple tenths to 5/10 of an inch of moisture, some local totals upwards to 3/4 of an inch. You put that together with today's event, and obviously you've got a moist topsoil, and it's going to be unfavorable to get into the field without a day or two of warming and drying. Now, as we go on into the latter part of the weekend, we will get an opportunity to warm up. We'll see some increasing wind, and we'll likely see the temperatures rise quite a bit. We might see some 60 and 70-degree temperatures in a few locations across the lower Midwest as we go into Sunday and Monday. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see some areas in Kansas or Missouri getting up close to 80 degrees just before a cold front cuts through that area towards the day on Tuesday. Well, the drier and warmer bias sounds really good. I think most of us will be excited about that. The soil temperatures will come up close to the minimum threshold for a little corn germination, but we don't go much warmer after that. Midweek next week, we have a large storm system that will move through the Midwest. It'll switch things around. We'll have rain first, and then we'll have cooler temperatures in the second half of next week. So the environment is not going to be all that ideal for getting into the fields and pushing seed into the ground. But perhaps in the second week of April, we'll see some returning more favorable conditions, and maybe we can start seeing field work occur a little bit more significantly. And we'll look for the lower Midwest to warm up into some 50s and perhaps a few 60s with Missouri warmest. We'll expect tomorrow to be even warmer in the lower parts of the region, but colder in the north as a reinforcing shot of cold air comes in. And again, the big warm-up will be late in the weekend towards the early part of next week. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's closing market report. Remember to go to our website, WILLAG.org, and subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter ahead of Monday's huge report release day of the planting intentions and quarterly grain stock report. We'll have full coverage, including audio analysis, as well as all of the numbers. Again, subscribe at WILLAG.org. Click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.
A Baltimore woman bought a painting at a West Virginia flea market for $7.